Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am here back again with Dom. Dom, how have you been?
I am exceptional. How are you?
I'm doing very well. You have a good off season. Didn't it feel, I mean, this off season felt like it was honestly maybe 3 weeks.
Yeah, like the summer off season always drags on for so ridiculously long that you start to like count down the days. But this one, it felt like it was 2 weeks ago that we were discussing the end of season 31. So maybe that's a testament to how good that season was. I don't have such high hopes for this one, but hopefully you can change my mind on that.
I mean, in fairness, it'd be hard to have equally high hopes as we had for an all-returnee season with such a stellar cast as season 31 had. But yeah, I mean, we've talked about thinking back to last summer in like early July, when the Genius 4 was just starting and we couldn't wait for the Genius premiere. And we knew we had that whole season to cover and then all of season 31 to cover. And it was just going to be this insane 6 months or so, or maybe not 6 months, but 5.5 months. And here we are now. The off season is over. We are back now, of course, to talk about Survivor season 32. And that is what we're here for today. And we're going to do this a little differently than our typical preseason podcast. We only have these couple minute videos and these short bios. And normally we talk way too long about these people that as soon, you know, 2 minutes into the premiere, we're going to have completely different impressions. Today, what we're going to do is we're going to do our draft in real time. And we're going to try to keep this a little quicker, but keep it still exciting. So we're going to be doing our draft for the winner. All that matters is who picks the winner. And understand, we will not be bringing this up in future podcasts. We know no one cares about who we drafted outside of this episode in particular.
I think it's useful to keep the score except when I lose. So last season, for instance, nobody cares who picked who, but the previous seasons, you know, that starts to become a relevant thing.
Yeah, when we first started doing these, I think it took me like 8 or 9 drafts to actually win one. I didn't realize it until I'd gone like 6 or 7 in a row losing, and someone pointed out, have you ever won ever at one of these? And I hadn't, but I've been on something of a hot streak lately, so we'll see how this goes.
Do you know what the count is at the moment?
I sure don't. I have no idea what it would even be close to at this point. I barely keep track beyond, you know, it's episode 11 of the season, and I look back like, oh, who did we draft again? That's all I ever really care about.
Yeah, all we know is that I'm far ahead, and that doesn't look to change anytime soon.
Okay. I suppose we can. That is a fair description. We'll leave it at that. So, Dom, a couple of things before we get into this new cast. Before we even get into Survivor, I should add, we did do part one of our Genius Season 3 coverage. We will definitely be looking to do parts 2 and 3 as soon as we can. I don't have a timetable on that yet. We both have been extremely busy lately, but we definitely do want to get those out ASAP.
Yeah, we need one of those like public commitment things so that like we have to like forfeit some kind of, I don't know, there has to be some kind of penalty every time we fail to deliver that for the next like month or so.
Yeah, I don't want it to become the next Big Brother Canada season 1 in review podcast that we literally put off for like a year and a half.
Also the Big Brother player rankings, which we never in fact did, you know, a year and a half later. So if we ever feel like doing that, then maybe we can just surprise you with that. But yeah, we do plan on getting the rest of Genius season 3 to you at some point in the near future. We're not quite sure when yet.
Yeah, and for people, I definitely should be plugging this show more than I do. Jordan Parhar's reality TV Rahappy Hour on the RHAP Rahapups feed is fantastic. And he and Taryn Armstrong and Alex Kidwell and Brent Wolgamott, they did do like a ton of Big Brother rankings, season rankings, player rankings, non-winner rankings. People who are not checking that out absolutely should be. Those guys are doing a great job. Jordan in particular is such a stellar host. Really, I was on that podcast talking Survivor last season, and that was a lot of fun. And I'm actually, I'll put this out there now. I'm going to the live know-it-alls in New York, and I'm going to meet up with Jordan and that whole crew. So that's going to be really cool, too. And speaking of trips, Dom, the last thing I want to get into before we get into this Survivor season is you finally came to North America this offseason. Tell the people about that.
Yeah, I finally graced Canada and the U.S. with my presence. And the final verdict is Canada is great. Vancouver is great. The U.S. is fine. You know, could take it or leave it. And if you ever go to Atlanta, for the love of God, rent a car, because it is impossible to get around without some form of your own transport.
I totally forgot about this until just now, but I do want to bring, I need to shame you on air for this. Dom, tell the people what you did when you were like, you were stuck at a bus station or whatever, and some guy offered you a ride and you took it. Explain that to people, like in his truck, some random guy.
Okay. So firstly, it wasn't a random guy. I've been speaking to him for at least 10 or 15 minutes. Also, like, I could tell this was the kind of guy who was okay. He wasn't going to, like, I wasn't going to wind up horribly dismembered in his dungeon or something. Like, I was going to be fine. He did have a touch of Steve Navery about him, which maybe is a good thing. I didn't even know.
More I don't know about that.
More on that for a separate podcast, I guess. But yeah, it was fine. There was absolutely no stranger danger there at all, despite what your scaremongering might have led you to believe. And I emerged perfectly unscathed and unharmed.
Well, I just worry about you, Dom. That's all.
Well, that's good to know.
I think it's fucking crazy to get in a car with a stranger in Atlanta when you're just this obviously foreign person who has no one. You're traveling by yourself. You have a posh British accent. This guy's not. He's got to be thinking to himself, no one's going to know for 2.5 days that this guy's missing.
Well, so the best part of my trip to Atlanta was the night I got there, I was looking for the Airbnb place that I booked, and it was on like the main street in Atlanta where it runs right from the kind of nice part of town to the kind of grotty part of town. And I was kind of stuck in the middle there. So I had no idea where I was going. And I walk up, I see this house, which vaguely looks like what I remember the picture looking like. And there's this guy standing outside who clearly is high on something. I don't know quite what. And I talk to him and like, so is it like, are you the Airbnb guy? And he just like looks at me strangely and says, no. So I kind of back off and walk away for a bit. And then as I'm walking to the other side of that house, I see this sign saying that it's like this halfway house for ex-convicts who are like retransitioning back into society. So I think the guy was high on something, but basically, mainly he was surprised that this random British guy had just turned up with a suitcase trying to check into this like facility for prisoners.
He probably thought he was hallucinating you. He must have. Like, that's got to be a more logical explanation than, in fact, a random British guy has shown up and asked me for directions.
Yeah. And then when I found the actual place, it was somehow even more surreal because it was this weird artist commune where you walk in the doors and literally every painting or sculpture in there features nudity in some way. And that's not an issue. Like, yeah, that's fine. But it wasn't really what I was expecting from like this carefully crafted Airbnb pitch. It was made it look very kind of normal and upright. So
they knew you were European. They're just trying to set the European atmosphere.
Well, of course. So that was a little strange, and I hope not entirely representative of any trips I might make there in the future, but yeah, it was a good time.
All right, well, I'm glad that you enjoyed your trip over to North America, and that you are absolutely right. Your observation is not wrong, that Canada is probably a lot better than the United States. Yeah. All right, so I think the only other thing before we get into this draft that we want to get into is that the theme of the season, once again, is brains versus beauty versus brawn. We saw this, of course, in Survivor Cagayan. That season went extremely well, at least in my opinion. I know I've said before that that's probably my favorite season, to date at least. Is this too soon for you? Are you excited to see brains versus beauty versus brawn back again?
So I don't hate the theme. I'm kind of over themed seasons in general at this point, given that we've had like 5 or 6 in a row now. And I'd much rather they go back to either focusing on the location or some other aspect of the show that isn't solely related to this kind of random thing that they want to tie everything into, even though any links that they might draw are completely tenuous every single time. Like,
yeah, I think the concern is we want each season to be distinct. We want it to have like a hook. We don't want it to just be Survivor, the 32nd edition.
Yeah, because the first time it's kind of an interesting idea. This time around, it feels like they had to come up with something. So they kind of threw that back in and then once again retrofitted the cast that they had to make them fit the theme. Where if you look at some of the tribe divisions here, there were some very questionable assignments where like, does that person really belong on the Brains tribe or the Beauty tribe? Like, it's not coherent in any apparent way to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably always going to be the case. Like, you're going to have a rough time finding 6 people for each of these 3 subsets. And I think it's probably we're better off for it, having people not really fit in necessarily perfectly in line, or they could be in a couple of different places. Like, I think it's good that we have a solid mix of people rather than 3 groups of 6 caricatures.
Yeah, like I think I would rather have this instead of them casting to the twist where it's like we need to have 6 beauties and 6 brainy people and so on, where you are just going to end up with people who fit only into that stereotype. And you're going to get that to an extent anyway, where like their definition of what makes someone beautiful or what makes someone brainy is going to be very narrow, very stereotypical, and just kind of fitting the dominant like cultural narrative every single time. But if you aren't going to have this theme, clearly you want it to mean something. And I'm not so sure that it does, at least on this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably something of just an excuse to get them into 3 tribes, which I am very, very much for. I mean, before we even started podcasting about Philippines, we were talking about how the 3 tribe format is like a great solution to just organically create fantastic game dynamics way more often off, and then the two tribe. And I think there also is an element of like, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, Kageyan was such a hit, why not go back to that well? So do you feel like any tribe has an advantage in your eyes?
So remind me what we said last time, if you can remember. I think we said
that... I don't remember, but I think we said, and this, I think I would stand by this, and this will be a theme probably as we get into the draft, and maybe I'm tipping my hand a little bit. I think there are certain spots on certain tribes that stand out really well. And like, for instance, I would basically always be picking whoever the LJ equivalent is in my, as my winner pick. I think that's what we got into.
Yeah, I believe what we said was when you have a familiar concept of brains versus brawn, that's going to be like the defining thing. And so beauty doesn't really fit into that. They kind of shoehorned it in there so that they could have three tribes. And that's great for us as viewers, because as you always like to say, that's the ideal format to have. But in terms of gameplay, I think it also means the beauties can kind of step back from the fray a bit and kind of pick where they want to go. And they're not forced into this almost artificial conflict between these two different sides. And so someone who is a capable player on the beauty tribe is going to be in a good spot. That's also true because the type of people that Survivor likes to cast for a beauty tribe typically are not the most capable. And so if you can have that kind of game savviness as a member of that tribe, you probably have a leg up compared to the brains tribe or even the brawn tribe, where more people tend to know what they're doing. And we'll get into whether we think that's true this season, but that's what I would expect to hold normally.
Yeah, and I think the problem for me, I agree with all that, and I think the problem for me is I'm not so sure there is an LJ equivalent on the beauty tribe this time around. I think this is probably more of an issue in the Worlds Apart scenario, where they're painting them as like, this is what life class they fit into, where I think they probably really did not want a white collar person to win that season. And I don't think that's the case where they don't want like a brains person to win this season. But I would say if there was one tribe that they would, if production had their druthers, they would say, let's probably not have a beauty win, right? We don't want it to, the message to be that beauty is what wins out in Survivor.
Yeah, I guess you could draw a link between the brawn theme and the blue collar thing, where I think going into Worlds Apart, they wanted a blue collar person to win that season. And now here again, it's like that same kind of stereotype links more to brawn than to beauty or to brains, because I think right. Jeff Probst kind of embodies their philosophy there, where he's very much a brawn kind of guy. He fancies himself as blue collar, even though he, you know, has $20 million and six mansions by now. Like, that's his cultural background as he identifies it, and so he's more of like the jock, the salt of the earth type of guy than the kind of dweeby nerd who he expects to populate the brains tribe, or the kind of airheaded model who he expects to populate the beauty tribe. And so I think that's going to be, whether consciously or subconsciously, feeding into the way that they like to cast a season. And so, and that doesn't mean that a beauty person can't win or a brains person can't win. It just means that the type of people that they really like and have the most confidence in will tend to end up on the brawn tribe, I would think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think you're right. I think a lot of it, honestly, maybe the reason that I have that perception is because Jeff Probst in particular really seems to love the, particularly the alpha men who, you know, dig in their heels and go to work and roll up their sleeves and bring their lunch pails and hard hats and put their family on their back and stuff like overcome the nerdy, like you said, like the nerdy brains or the airhead beauties, like the guys that just want it more than everyone else. I think Jeff really loves that storyline. And I think you're right that Braun, I think if I had to call it now, I would say I think production would probably want Braun to win again.
Do you think there's any desire for variety where coming off of Kageyan, where you have a brawn person winning, and Tony, who I think is the quintessential brawn type, right? Like, you look at him and he's not beauty, he's not brains, he is definitely brawn. Do you think they're looking for someone else to win this time around? Or if anything, would that be even further confirmation of that storyline in their head, where like if a brawn person wins again, then that's just conclusive proof that clearly they're the most suited to win at Survivor and at life?
I think actually you might be onto something, and this, I'll bring it back to what I said earlier about maybe beauty is the new white collar, where I could actually see them really wanting a brain person to win this time to show that there are multiple intelligences to bring the Genius 3 back into it. I could actually see a lot of merit to that, like Jeff Probst really hamming it up at the possible reunion. If it's a brawn, if it's a brain or a beauty who wins, like, see, there is no one way to play Survivor. You got to interact with the beauty. I don't even know what he says. I don't know what Jeff Probst, what goes through his head.
Yeah, well also, I think it's hard for beauty to really fit into that, because if it's brawn or brains, you can say, okay, this is that one attribute that they have that really lends itself well to Survivor. So I'm good at surviving in the elements and winning all these challenges and really like imposing myself on the game. Or I'm the more cerebral type. I'm good at figuring things out and masterminding things and backstabbing people and so on. What does beauty really have that you could build that kind of theme around? Like, I'm not really seeing what goes into that.
I think the rough math that they want us to be doing, and I think this is how they would spin it if pretty much anyone from the beauty team ended up winning, is brawn is the like physical aspect of Survivor, brains is the strategic aspect of Survivor, and I think they would consider or probably try to sell beauty as the social aspect of Survivor. Oh, they stayed under the radar with their amazing social play like Parvati did and stuff like that.
I could see that.
No one like, viewed them as a threat, things like that.
Yeah, like the beauties are the popular people, and your popularity is the key to winning at Survivor and at life. And so, you know, that seems plausible to me.
It's all about influencing the people.
Of course. The other thing that makes me wonder, though, is they're billing this season as being the toughest season ever, and you have all of these injuries, and the ads for the season are focusing very much on like who's going to get medevaced and who's going to get injured and so on. And to me, that really suggests brawn more so than any of the other archetypes.
Brawn to do well or to get medevaced?
To do well, because if this is meant to be the toughest season ever, then if all the brawn people get taken down and it's some random model who wouldn't look out of place on any other season who ends up taking it down, then what does that really say about how tough it actually was?
That's actually a really good point that I think you are right, given that they really do seem to be playing up the conditions, and I expect that to be a theme over the course of the whole season. Do they really want that final message? It seems like their final message they're going to want is someone who was able to overcome that, right? Like someone who didn't crack under the stress of the situation.
Yeah, and that's only so reliable as a predictor of who's going to do well. Like, let's say a beauty or a brains person does go on to win. They're not just going to discard that narrative of, oh, this is an amazingly tough season and everyone got injured. Like, they're going to focus on that still, but they have to build that around the winner somehow. So it might be you wouldn't look at her and think that she could survive in the elements, but it turns out everyone underestimated her and she was able to do that or something. Or, you know, this is some like Cochrane-esque nerd who lives indoors and doesn't really go outside, but he was able to acclimatize himself to the elements and really learn to survive out there, all this kind of stuff that we've seen many times before. And so I think that's a harder sell though than if like Scott Pollard or someone is just like, yeah, all right, we've got this, and just runs throughout the entire season.
Well, let's stay on Scott, because this is why I asked the clarifying question of, do you mean to get medevaced or to do well? Because if we think back to that, like the craziest conditions that I think we've seen so far were in Guatemala, where maybe it's just because of that crazy trek at the beginning of it, but it was the big guys that were going down early in that were really getting killed by the conditions. And Scott Pollard is 6'11", 310 pounds or something.
Yeah,
can he make it 39 days without dying?
I believe he is the tallest guy they've ever had on the show, right?
I mean, Cliff Robinson said that, but correct me if I'm wrong, didn't Mitchell from season 2 claim to be 7 feet tall?
Possibly. I know Scott Pollard in his video makes a point of saying he's taller than Cliff, or at least, you know, better than Cliff in some way. So,
but I think he's wrong about that, though. Please, Jeff Pittman or Rob's fact checker, please let me know.
Yeah, clearly that comparison is on his mind, though. The point is well taken. Like, it's not people who are built like Scott who tend to do well in those kind of conditions. And so I could imagine, like, if that is what ends up happening, it could almost be like an homage to the Brawn tribe, where it's like these amazing athletes and competitors go out there and get taken down by, you know, they try their best, they really put everything they had into it, but it wasn't enough. Like, that could be a way to stay true to the way they see the Brawn tribe without actually needing the Brawn tribe to win.
Who is the biggest guy? I guess Will Sims would be the biggest guy who's ever made the finals, but like, I guess Richard Hatch back season 1 would be second. It seems like none of the big guys ever make it to the end, apart from those two.
Oh God, you're
I don't know. I mean, Colby got fat in the reunion or like, sure. Whatever.
I guess Brian Hiding was quite well built for his time, like Tom Westman.
I mean, he's an average sized guy. He's 5'10", 170 pounds.
Yeah, there have been these alpha men who are kind of athletic and good at challenges and stuff, but in terms of actual sheer mass and size,
it's got to be Will Sims and Richard Hatch have got to be the clear front runners.
Yeah, I'm currently running through it in my head, but you're stumping me here. I think you have it right.
Okay. Well, I think that's at least something to be on the lookout for is, you know, as they say, big trees fall hard. Like, we saw James Clement essentially get medevaced twice. Or actually, you know, essentially, yeah, he didn't literally. He got voted out with the banana etiquette or whatever, if that was the same episode. But people know what I'm talking about. All right, Dom, I do want to talk more about the conditions later, but I want to keep it positive for now. Let's get into this draft.
All right.
And as the person who won the previous draft, I get to decide if I want to go get the number one pick or go the number two and three pick. Of course, we will be doing a snake draft, so we'll essentially be taking back-to-back picks. Dom, I'm actually going to learn from the greatest NFL coach of all time, Bill Belichick. I'm going to defer here because I really don't know who I want. And I think one running theme here might be, at least for me, I really like this cast. I don't see any of these people winning.
See, I don't really like this class, and I also don't see any of these people winning. So, like, we come at it from two different angles, I think, where in one sense it's good that the power rankings, if you will, are more flat this time, where there's no obvious standout, there's no one person who clearly is just going to be the massive favorite to win the season. On the other hand, there's no one who really stands out as having that kind of capability, and so, you know, I would love it if there were so many promising people that you couldn't choose between them, whereas instead it seems like no one really stands out from the pack. And like in the past, when I've said, oh, this person is my clear favorite, that's often ended up being wrong. But I would stand by a lot of that in retrospect, because at the time they jumped out from the screen based on their bios, based on, you know, some aspect of the way they carried themselves, whatever. Here there's no one who really hits that note for me. And maybe that will change like 5 minutes into the premiere, but for now, I'm having a lot of trouble with this. More so than any other season we've done a draft for.
I totally agree. I think this is, like you said, like the flattest field for me, where if I were to right now evaluate everyone on a scale of 1 to 10, I don't think I would have anyone higher than an 8 or lower than a 3. Or a 3 may even be too low. I think it's really even. And with the exception of a couple people, I'd probably have everyone between like 6 and 8.
I think San Juan del Sur was also kind of difficult in that regard, but beyond that, I think it's like we've been doing this for, I think, 8 seasons now, which is still mind-boggling to think about. And
I got news, Tom. This is our 10th season of Survivor coverage.
Jesus Christ. And with most of those, it was like, okay, yeah, that's the person I'm really throwing all my chips behind. This season, I just don't have anybody. So my first pick is going to be pretty much, I won't say pretty much at random, but it's like, I don't feel confident or strongly about it at all.
How much of this decision is going into picking someone that you think I want with the 2 and 3 picks?
Oh, very much so. But I'm hoping that you're going to have someone who you want to take late as a steal, but I can just like snipe in there one spot before and take them just at the right time. So that's the plan. I don't know if I can actually follow through on that, but I'll give it my best shot.
Okay. Well, I think without further ado, I am ready to hear this number one overall pick whenever you are ready to announce it. And I honestly have no idea who it's even going to be.
Neither do I.
I have no idea. Talk me through this. Let's hear how you're going to make this decision.
Okay. So I might end up just like reverting to type here and just picking someone who everybody would expect either me or you to like. I'm going to go with... So there's one person that I really like, but I think they're a bit too in your face about it, so it's tough. Okay,
I'm gonna call clock. I'm calling clock.
All right, I'm gonna go with Nick, who might actually be the Nick Uhas Memorial Wolf of the Season, because
number one on my draft board. I'm not even kidding.
Wonderful.
Like, I thought there was. I was debating not taking him with the 2 and 3 picks because I thought you wouldn't take him for a while.
Perfect. So I'm taking Nick, thank you, because part of it is just the RHAP connection, where like he has written some material for them in the past. Clearly he knows his stuff in that sense, although as we've seen in seasons past, that is no automatic qualification for doing well. But also, like, I think there's a decent chance he just crashes and burns, but on the off chance that he's good, he could be very good. It's kind of like the Matt Quinlan idea, where I don't have any great confidence in him. But if it turns out to be well-founded, then, you know, then he can take it all the way to the bank, I think. So I'm going to take Nick and not feel very happy about it, although I feel very happy that I managed to take him away from you.
Yeah, definitely. And I think at this point, people have probably heard enough preview podcasts. People know Nick is the 30-year-old guy on the Beauty Tribe, former RHAP blogger, who describes himself as a life coach. And I'm going to full disclosure here. I had not heard of more than maybe 7 or 8 of these people until 3 or 4 hours ago when I finally decided to watch these cast videos because the premiere was a couple of days away. I had already listened to the Robin Nicole preview, And so I had heard Nick described, but not actually seen him in action. And I knew it was going to go one of two ways, where if I thought that he was doing like the Spencer Bledsoe thing, where he's essentially just acting his way through casting just to get his spot, and then he can really do whatever he wants once he gets out there, I was going to be totally in on him. I started his video and he goes, "I'm Nick Maoriano," or whatever his last name is, "and I'm a life coach." And I paused it and I started taking notes and I said, "Fuck this guy." Like, there is nothing, as I've said before, there is no one who sketches me out apart from televangelists more than life coach. I think those are the number one and two professions to always have concerns about. However, I unpaused his video and he says, "And I know life coach is total bullshit." And I was totally on board with this guy. That, like, I think he is, for me, kind of the same reason that I like Penn Jillette. I like that this guy is open about how he thinks. And like, yes, I am being manipulative, but I'm being aware of that and I'm being open of that. Like, Penn Jillette is a professional magician, for people who don't know, the talking half of Penn and Teller. And instead of like most magicians who just insult you and say, "Oh my God, it's magic. Look at how crazy this is and look at my powers," they're open about the fact that these are obviously tricks and we're not going to insult your intelligence and we'll eventually show you how it's done. And I think Nick is exactly like that and I love it.
Yeah, I think you either have to be either quite dumb or quite sociopathic to be a life coach, and Nick is firmly on the latter end of that spectrum.
Along those lines, he reminded me of a great quote from Community back when it was still good, that Jeff Winger, the Joel McHale character, said, where he says, "Look, I'm not a sociopath. I know what I'm doing is wrong." And I think Nick is exactly like in that same camp, where he's recognizing, yes, I'm going to do this for my benefit and I'm going to be okay with that. But I do understand that this isn't necessarily the greatest, most honorable way to do things.
Yeah, he even looks like Jeff Winger as well. So he's got that going for him. And I guess that's why he's on the Beauty Tribe. But yeah, I think Nick, there's certainly like some Brian Heidick upside with Nick, where it's like, it's possible he is just this amazing bullshit artist who can completely snow everybody over. And if that's the case, then I'm very happy to have him on my team here.
Yeah. I'm really, really looking forward to Nick. He was at the top of my list, no bullshit. Part of me just wanted to have him on my team. And I think you are exactly right. The guy that I think we may be looking at here is Nick Juhas 2.0, and this may become the Nick Maoriano Wolf of the Season, or whatever we want to call it. But yeah, I guess we should add, he is officially, for sure, the winner of the Nick Juhas Memorial Wolf of the Season.
Yeah, he's either Brian Heidick or Brian Hart, and I'm not quite sure which one he's going to be yet.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way of putting it. The one thing that does kind of concern me about Nick, and this is me sound the bell for Colin Reed's too much into these people's social media stuff. His Twitter bio was something like "fictional character on Survivor 32. To me, that reads, "I may not be so thrilled with how I'm going to come across here."
Yeah, although, like, given the type of character that he wants to portray, it's possible that it's just not going to reflect at all how he is in real life, regardless of what the outcome is. So, like, if he does really badly and it's made to look like an idiot, kind of Stephen Fishback style from last season, then, okay, that's bad. But then also, if he is made to look like this complete, just, like, Brian Heidick style sociopath, then he might not want that to reflect on how he is in real life either. So, you know, I don't think you can read too much into that.
Yeah, sure. And just my other concern about him is from his video. He said, "I want to have fun manipulating people and playing the game. I don't want to be bored out there," which is stupid because that's the easier way to win. My concern is he gets bored and he starts doing things out of boredom, and that's never where you want to be. But yeah, definitely very much looking forward to seeing what Nick has in store for season 32. Okay, so I'm up now with the number 2 and 3 overall picks. I really don't know what I'm going to do here. I'm going to stick with my draft board, I guess, for now. Actually, I'm gonna make a move. I know it's early, and I know that I always get burned by doing this in the early rounds. I think there's someone that I have high on my board that you are not going to take with your next two sets of picks.
Okay.
So to cut off the suspense, my number two pick, I don't think is going to be that big of a surprise to you or probably many people listening. I'm gonna take Liz Markham. What does she call herself? What's her title? The quantitative research or whatever. Quantitative strategist.
Yes.
Quantitative strategist. She's an MIT grad, and we recently learned that Stephen Fishback is the one who recruited her. Yeah, although, I mean, now I'm starting to regret this pick, because what has Stephen ever gotten right when it comes to Survivor? So she is a former blackjack card counter, and she made actually a very solid reference to the book Bringing Down the House, which the Kevin Spacey movie 21 was based off of. The book was much, much better. Actually, one of the last books I ever read, which was in like 8th grade or what. I don't read books. There's too much good TV on. But I also like a couple other things that she referenced. She referenced both Littlefinger and Claire Underwood. She wants to be a bit of a villain. I really like the vibe that Liz is bringing to this. I think she definitely has the brains in her to play a good game of Survivor. My concern is she's on the brains tribe, and might her spot be getting blown up because she's on the brains tribe?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the idea of Liz. I don't know if I am buying shares in the actual Liz yet. What I do know is she is a mortal lock to be the Ian Terry unrequited crush of the season.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, I think plenty of reasons to be optimistic about Liz. She certainly, for me, seems like a rational, self-interested player, which is what I'm looking for. She looks like she's going to be someone who, with a background in gambling, is going to understand the importance of constant reevaluation. I think that's probably maybe my number one priority if I'm looking for something in a player in Survivor. So I think there's definitely a lot of upside here for Liz.
Yeah, she seems very self-assured, very smart, very kind of aware of what's going on around her. I don't know if it comes across too much that way, though, to the other players out there, where, like, obviously she's on the brains tribe, she's going to be there for a reason. The others aren't going to hold that against her necessarily, but they will be aware of that as a reason to be wary of her and maybe target her if the chance arises.
Right. I think that's the thing is, like, if she does kind of play pretty hard and pretty fast, I think she could be the type to maybe spook some people, especially on the heels of people like Natalie Anderson or like Kelly Wentworth last season. Or I guess they didn't see Kelly Wentworth at that point, but they would have just seen Natalie, where the kind of like badass strong woman is like the new, especially on the heels of like Sophie and Kim and Denise. That seems to be the new type that does really well in Survivor. So I'd be pretty concerned.
And also, having watched Salmon Darcer, they already knew that Kelly Wentworth was the best player to ever play the game. So yeah, that's even further evidence for your point. But but yeah, I think Liz straddles that line between being kind of good in the way that you need to be at various aspects of the game and being good at those in this very overt way where everybody knows what's going on. And she says that she's happy to flirt with people and use her charm to get what she wants, which is fine if you have that. And based on what I saw of the video, she does. But I worry that it's kind of like Monica Padilla style, where everybody kind of knows what the game is and they see what you're doing. And it comes across as fake, even if you're actually just being sincere and saying what you want. And I don't know if that becomes the initial perception of her. I don't know if she can shake that off.
Right. I think that's the thing. I could see her landing on the right side of that line, but that is the big concern for me, is potentially being on the wrong side of that line. But I think if she can kind of manage her image, like Steven said, mitigate her threat level early on, I think is going to be important. Then I could definitely see her being a key player if she can hit the merge.
Yeah, very high upside for Liz, I think. And if she does turn out to be the player that we've all been waiting for, then she could be fantastic both to watch and to kind of admire as a player this season.
Yeah. So there is my first overall pick. And with my second overall pick here, I'm going to let the person I probably would take drop. I'm going to take Michelle. And this is a person I don't know if you would have ended up taking her. Okay, I guess not, given the way that you're laughing at me.
We found her.
Right, we found her. Stay tuned, buddy. There are plenty of these, I would imagine, where I think plenty of people on this cast have a ton of equity. And the reason, kind of like what I was just saying, where Michelle seems to fit into that perfect type of, she's probably the strongest chick on the beauty tribe. It seems like no matter how that ends up shaking out, I have a really hard time seeing Michelle being gone early. I could see her being a big contributor. I could see her rubbing people the wrong way for sure. But I she's a super fan of the show. I think she's going to know roughly how to play the early game. She's traveled a lot. She has like presumably some kind of worldly experience, she studied yoga. She's probably just smokes a bunch of weed. The more I read of this, traveled with a band, moved to Martha's Vineyard. Yeah, I guess maybe if she's not a huge stoner, she could do well. I probably should have read further on to this before taking her.
Are there like weed withdrawals that we need to be concerned about here? Like, educate me on this.
No, I think she'll be fine. It's probably been long enough for her by the time that day one has actually started that she'll be able to make it. And I do, of course, want to point out that I know nothing about Michelle, as evidenced by me taking her this early, apparently, according to Dom. And I don't know at all that she smokes weed. It just seems like it wouldn't surprise me if she did.
She seems like your type in quite a few ways. Aside from not being right. Blonde,
well, tell me why shouldn't I be interested in Michelle? Why do you think she's not going to do well? What stood out to her?
I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm just saying, what I guess in this season it's more defensible because nobody really like leaps off the screen for any particular reason, but what is it about Michelle that really draws you to her? I guess
okay, it's the reason that I would take her so highly, and apparently an awful pick because I could have let her fall about three rounds apparently before this was gonna come into play. The reason is, I feel like you said, it's a very even cast, and with virtually everyone, like we just talked about with Liz possibly coming across as too wolfy, I feel like there are things I can point to as, this could be a big problem for this person. Whereas with Michelle, I think there are fewer of those things, and that's what it comes down to for me. Like, I see her having a really easy time just blending in, and then having a lot of things that I would typically want to see in a Survivor player in the end game going well for her. Like, she has, I think she's a good speaker. She's compelling. I think she could get people excited, maybe not excited, to, maybe that's too strong of a word, to vote for her in the end. And I know I do this every season. Like, if you think back to our San Juan del Sur, this was Kelly Wentworth that I was talking about. And she crashed and burned, and I took shit for that for about a year. And this could completely be the same thing happening over again here with Michelle. I don't know. I just feel like she definitely could have a solid chance here. I just feel like she has fewer weaknesses that I can point to, at least.
Okay, sure.
Overt weaknesses. Maybe there are plenty that I'm just not seeing yet.
Yeah, and I'm not saying you're wrong. And maybe in a few months' time, we'll be talking about Michelle Fitzgerald as the winner of season 32, and I'll have to eat crow for that. But I guess I don't see a reason to jump on board just yet. And I, by all means, prove me wrong. But I would love for you to be wrong about it, first and foremost.
Okay, well, let's find out what hot picks you end up making here with your 4 and 5 picks.
Okay, so I'm torn between taking the people I like, taking the people I think have the best chance of doing well, and then taking the people that I think you like and you think have the best chance of doing well. So I have an inkling of who your sleeper pick might be that you're trying to wheel. And I could take it now and give myself 2 shots at sniping it, but I think what I'm going to do is take someone first and then pick that person so that...
Okay.
Okay. All right. So I think...
You want to really make it hurt. You want to make get my hopes up that this person will in fact fall.
Absolutely. I mean, based on your known preferences, I think there are a few different people it could be, but let's see.
You always find it. You always do it. So I don't know what you're thinking about.
I have an idea, okay? I think I know, but I'm going to save it just for the right moment. So with the first pick, and I guess the real pick of this round, I'm going to... maybe not make the most high EV pick, although I think there's a good argument to be made. I'm going to take Aubrey because I know she is someone who we both have like this kind of indirect connection to through a mutual like internet friend, I guess. And I think Aubrey, we spoke about how a lot of this cast doesn't really distinguish themselves, and Aubrey certainly does. And she plays into that a lot. She plays up those quirks in her personality. And there's a chance that the others won't really take well to that. But if they do, I think she could fit in very well. She could fly under the radar in the way that she would need to until a certain point. And then she could use that knowledge that she has to position herself quite well going forward. And there's an argument that maybe she wouldn't get on well with someone like the beauty women, I think would be the biggest concern. But if she can get past that, I think she could be pretty well set.
Yeah, the person that you mentioned is the great @MelGotServed, is a good friend of Aubrey's in real life, apparently. So just knowing just that connection, Aubrey was someone before I'd even checked out the cast that I just liked the idea of, like you said. And she was someone, I know when we talked to Steven or whatever, I said, hey, Aubrey's someone I like. That was prior to actually watching her video, and I don't mean to suggest that I dislike her, but I made those comments not being aware that she was a huge fan of astrology, which... at least I'll say this about astrology. It's just like the light version of religion. But I was not aware that Aubrey was a big into astrology. That actually kind of strikes me as like against type based on what little I would have thought I knew about her. But yeah, she definitely has like the Lena Dunham vibe going for her and things like that.
How
like,
dare
she's definitely
you?
What does that mean?
It's grievously offensive.
Lena Dunham's like the most famous person in her 20s in the world.
And also, okay, we don't need to get into that now, but I don't really get that vibe at all. But the astrology thing does concern me a bit. Like, it is on that constellation of, like, religion, life coaching, and Mike Scoopin's pay it forward schemes. Right. But I don't know. She doesn't seem all that into it in any kind of sincere way. It's more like as a joke, I think.
I don't know. It did not sound like a joke to me, the way she was, like... the way she was describing her signs about I'm a Gemini rising, but I'm a Scorpio October, whatever. Like, and so that's why my personality is as it is. And I certainly at least don't subscribe to that. And I don't know how far that's going to get you in Survivor or in life.
There is a certain like Professor Trelawney vibe with Aubrey, and I dig it, but I don't know if everyone out there will.
Okay. Solid transition here. She is also a very big Harry Potter fan.
Yes. As all people should be.
As are you. And actually, in anticipation of this, I was going to ask you what house you think Aubrey would be in and what you think each of us would be in.
Aubrey is an obvious Hufflepuff. Like, there's no doubt about that. I think you're a bit too lazy to be a Slytherin, but...
I'm not proactive enough in my evil ways. No.
There's that saying, why attribute to malice what can be attributed to incompetence? And I think that really kind of sums us both up to a T.
So where does that put us? Are we Hufflepuff? Is Hufflepuff bad?
No, Hufflepuff's not bad. It's more like they're the butt of the joke occasionally, but they're supposed to be like the do-gooders, they're well-meaning and so on.
How was Neville not a Hufflepuff? That's my question.
Yeah, that's always been the big question for me. I mean, I guess the argument is, oh, he's brave and he displays all of these valiant qualities and everything, but he's a Hufflepuff. Come on. I think I would be a Ravenclaw and you would be... I don't think the Sorting Hat would give you a house. It would just kind of sit there until you took it off.
Okay, interesting. I asked our good mutual friend in anticipation of this question to see if you guys would match answers. You did not. I asked Haley Strong. She put me in Slytherin. I don't know if that's fair. I don't think that's fair. But I wouldn't know a better answer. Back to Aubrey.
Hold on. What did she say I was?
I did not think to ask.
So you're not a Ravenclaw either then.
I don't know what that means. Is Ravenclaw like really generous and thinking about others or whatever? Like,
I suppose that's more of a Gryffindor trait. I don't know.
So I guess let's go back to Aubrey. The other thing, not only the astrology, and I promise I do genuinely really like Aubrey and am happy to see her on the show and everything, and I think she could do well. The other thing that slightly concerns me, and I don't know if this is something they have in England. I hope for your sake they do not. Aubrey, for whatever reason, seems into the word Moxie, and if that is because of Moxie the soda, if she's a big fan of Moxie the soda, that's another huge mark against Aubrey. Moxie the soda is the worst readily available soda available in the United States. Do they have it in England?
We do not, and I did not encounter it on my short trip over there, so I'll have to take your word for that.
It's awful. Okay, here's what you do to recreate Moxie. Pour some tonic water into some cough syrup, and then you have some Moxie. I think that's the recipe. Yeah. But anyway, okay, let's say some nice things about Aubrey, because I certainly do.
I did.
I love it when they cast, like, the Aubrey type. Like, I remember saying this about Sophie Clark back in the day. Like, people that are, in a respectful way, obviously not there to be the bikini babes. Like, they're there to bring that other angle to these women in their 20s. And I think Aubrey could be really, really good for that. I think she could definitely be a lot of fun. And I actually do think this is not a bad pick by any stretch. Maybe I don't see her having quite the upside that you seem to as far as winning, but I do think she could be in there for quite a while and potentially put herself in a spot to win.
Yeah, I'm basically obligated to take the people who follow me on Twitter, even if they're only doing that because of their own perceived obligation. So now that we've got that out of the way, I can make my second actual pick to snipe you and make you furious. And are you ready for this?
I know it's coming.
All right. I really hope this is a person. Let's go with Darnell.
That is not it. And that is not even close. I was ready. I was feeling the heat. I'll tell you this. Before you even tell me why you are so into Darnell, I'm gonna let you know in advance that I'm gonna be hearing all of these words from the perspective of a person who Darnell was the bottom of my draft board.
Oh wow. Okay. Can I take the pick back then? Do I get a mulligan on that? All right. So how do I make a case for him now? Okay. So Darnell is, like, he's very intense, and I think that could be off-putting to people, and that could be the classic, like, first or second boot quality, where it's like, you're out there, you're stressed, you have no idea what you're doing, you have to pick someone to go, and this guy who is just spouting his mouth off and annoying everybody is the obvious candidate. However, if people buy what he's selling, and they just like him and like his personality, then I think he could be, like, that really at the core of whatever group ends up emerging there. And he speaks a lot in his video about the hardships that he's gone through in life, how he's had to work to overcome those. And that's the kind of classic thing you hear in survivor bios at this point. But I think, firstly, it's true. And also, it's more true than, like, Julia, for instance, saying she has a ton of life experience at the age of 18 because she went traveling for 2 months. Like, that in terms of the classic stuff that you hear all the time, that is actually, that does count for more than some of this other stuff. So I'm not saying if I could go back and do it again, I would pick him in the same spot, but that's the case for Darnell at any rate.
Okay, my concern about Darnell is, like you said, like, he does have a good kind of classic survivor story. I think at least the vibe I got from Darnell is I don't see him being able to like sit still within the game for too long. Like even if he can find himself in the majority, I think he could be the potentially super active or super paranoid guy who is just incapable of letting a good thing be what it is.
Yeah. There's also the fact that on this Braun tribe, there are lots of these big dominant personalities and I could see him clashing with those, but also if they end up just going at it, then he could be, whatever personality traits about him that other people find off-putting might kind of fade into the background based on this like larger clash that's going on.
Yeah, I think a lot of how well Darnell does is going to be obviously, and this is the case for pretty much everyone who's ever played Survivor, but how well he gets along with his starting tribe, where I think that Braun tribe is going to be really, really up for grabs as far as I don't see like some core alliance that I see as like a, or even necessarily a core pair that I see as like a lock to work together. And so that could mean a lot of different things for someone like Darnell, where I think he's that high variance type where maybe early on people could be really drawn to him and feel like, hey, this is a guy that in this tribe full of potential meatheads, this I can really open up to, but I could also see them being very sketched out by him. And that's the concern for me. And I feel like eventually over the course of 39 days, people are going to feel sketched out by Darnell.
All right, then enlighten me. Who is your pick? I assume you're even going for them this round. You might try to build them again if you're feeling brave.
I'm going to go for him right now. I'm just going to let you know. I'm going to let it sink in. Give me Kyle.
Really?
Really, wow. Kyle? Are you going to act incredulous at every pick I make?
You were right. I would not have expected that. So I will let you justify yourself correctly.
I thought Kyle, I'm going to make a weird comparison, and it's one that's not going to sound like much of a compliment, but I think back preseason, this was definitely someone we had our eye on before his season. That season was Big Brother 15, and that person was Spencer Clawson, the kind of rugged-looking guy. Listen, the kind of rugged-looking guy that I think just has a, I think could have, at least just based on him talking to a camera, have a really good way with people and just kind of getting people comfortable with him and have simultaneously a strategic and self-interested mind for the game. And I think Kyle, if I'm looking for at this point in the draft, people with upside, I think Kyle could have like maybe Chris Doherty upside, something like that.
Okay.
You think I'm crazy? You're looking around like you're looking for someone else to jump in that has something sane to say.
So, Kyle, I kind of see where you're going with the Spencer Clawson comparison. I think Spencer was a lot more, I won't say soft-spoken, but I think like the level of kind of shadiness that he had was a lot more suited to the game of Big Brother, where there were so many other crazy things going on that people could keep that at the back of their minds for the time being. And Spencer, you can debate how close he ever actually was to winning. Like, okay, he got to the final three. I guess like if he had won the final HOH and taken Gina Marie, then maybe, but he was always like on the periphery of whatever group he was a part of, even though I think he did quite well to get into that majority towards the end. So I just don't see that with Kyle. I think Kyle is a lot more antagonistic. I think he's going to clash a lot more with the people on his tribe, possibly including Darnell. So that could be fun to see. And I don't know. I think especially when he has to deal with the people on the Brain Tribe and the Beauty Tribe, I don't know how well he's going to take to that either. And he talks of himself as this wannabe like latter day Russell Hantz, saying that he's going to take that to the next level and be the person that Russell could never be. And we saw Tony say that. We've seen other people who had some success say that. But I think Kyle like actually means it and doesn't grasp why Russell failed or what he would need to do differently in order to win.
Yeah, I mean, the Russell thing is definitely a concern, but like you said, Tony was someone who went out there wanting to play a lot like Russell and admiring the aggression, and I think he's someone that we definitely wrote off preseason. And I feel like, Kyle, maybe I'm just, because of the Tonys and Natalie Andersons and everyone that we picked 17th out of 18 ending up winning the season, I'm over-adjusting, I'm over-correcting, and now Kyle seems more appealing than he otherwise would. And I do have concerns about him being abrasive. Like he said in his video, he doesn't like stupidity, and he'll call it out, and I'm not sure how well that's going to go for him on Survivor, because I could see a lot of people on this cast setting him off. At the same time, I think there is value, and I think when we talk about whenever Scott Pollard gets drafted, this will come up again, where because of the way he looks, I think people in a game full of so much uncertainty, and this is going to sound super weird, I think when you can kind of just form an immediate impression of someone like you can with Kyle just and Scott Pollard based on the way they look, that's almost comforting. Even if it's not the most positive impression, you at least feel like you know where they stand.
Yeah, I guess I have to see it to believe it, but you okay, could be right.
I definitely, listen, I'm not completely, I could see him completely crashing and burning too. He could be Zane Knight 2.0 for all I know.
And if he is, I will be the first one to call you out on that.
Okay, I cannot wait. And now with my next pick, I think there's no way she's going to fall back to me, and I feel like she would definitely get taken by you. I'm going to take Anna.
Okay.
And I'm going to take her for similar reasons that I took Michelle with my first set of picks, where I feel like the girls, these super fans on the Beauty Tribe, are actually really well set up here. I feel like all three of them, especially if they band together, which I could see definitely happening, are all going to be underestimated. I think they all bring a lot more to the table, spoiler alert, on whatever the last one's name is that hasn't been, I don't remember it, that hasn't been drafted yet. I think all of them could surprise people. And I think Anna, particularly with her background in poker and gaming and gambling in general, I think, like I said about Liz, that's going to set her up for having the right priorities within the game in a lot, or at least potentially could and should. And I feel like I said, she's going to just be underestimated. And unlike Liz, she is not on the Brains Tribe, where people don't know automatically that she's necessarily got a brain on her. Yeah. So I know Anna was someone, at least like on the 2+2 crowd and stuff, someone getting a lot of attention. What's your take on Anna? Do you feel like she's going to fall in line with the typical poker player, kind of Albert, Jim Rice, John Robert, whoever I'm forgetting, where they kind of
Garrett.
Think that they're the grand Garrett. Yeah. Where they think that they're the grand geniuses and they just kind of flame out.
Yeah. I think I've been burned by that archetype too many times in the past. I would have taken Anna had she come back around to me, but they always seem to underperform in practice given what you might expect of them, just given that skill set. And we can debate the reasons for that, and I think that's a good conversation to have at another time, maybe, or even in detail later if you want. But yeah, Anna, I don't think is going to break out of that mold. I think she's going to do decently well, but end up, you know, either overthinking something or just getting in some tight situation that she can't wriggle her way out of, and that's going to be her undoing.
Well, I think that you just nailed it. The undoing often seems to be for the poker players. They overthink something because, they train their brains to think, what is my opponent thinking and what is their best move and how would they respond with that in mind? And when you're out there on Survivor, well over half of the people are not going to be playing with their best move in mind. And that's something that when you've spent however many hundreds and thousands of hours over a card table or playing online, it's just so hard to train your brain not to think that way. And that's I think the same way maybe we see lawyers not necessarily always do so well, is they always try to make these arguments that would hold up in court that just don't work on normal, actual Survivor players.
I guess, although I don't see why they would be any more deficient in that regard than just anyone with a normal job. Like, I think that's a reason for why they don't do especially well, but it's not a reason for why they do worse than you might expect them to.
Well, I think professional poker players, people who just play a lot of poker, are constantly thinking about, you know, half the game is what is my opponent, or maybe more than half is what is my opponent thinking.
Right.
But and that's also the case in Survivor, but the opponents are going to be so contrasted.
Right. But unless you're playing at a very high level, that thinking often involves my opponents are not thinking about the game in an optimal way. So what are their priorities? What is their thought process and how can I exploit that? And you would think that would be the perfect setup for Survivor, where so often people aren't thinking on the same wavelength as you and you have to like get in their head and try and see things from their perspective. So you would think that would set them up to do very well. And yet it doesn't seem to work out that way.
Okay. I mean, that's definitely a fair point. And I could see, I picked her. I think she definitely has upside. I think out of, if running down all those kind of alpha dog pro poker players that I listed through, she certainly is not in that type. First of all, because she's a woman and she's young. But I also think she's going to be so underestimated, whereas none of those guys ever were going to let people underestimate them. And I think they probably should have.
That's fair. And there's certainly, for the poker players that we've seen on the show so far, there has been like this alpha male mentality almost, where they can say, oh, I need to keep my intelligence under wraps. But realistically, it was always going to, if it didn't come through naturally, they were going to make sure the people found out about it. And
I'm going to keep my intelligence under wraps. And then literally 10 minutes into the game, Jim Rice is screaming at Ozzy how to do Towers of Pinoy.
I'm going to keep it under wraps and then throw into question whether I have any, based on the 10 minutes that we see. Yeah. So I think maybe Anna could be different in that regard. But honestly, I don't. The impression I get is that she isn't. Maybe she'll prove me wrong, and I hope she does. But I don't see any greater things for her than for the others who kind of came before her.
Okay. Again, like we keep going back to, I really don't feel like anyone in this draft, and this is going to continue to be the case for the next several picks for me, I could see five or six of these people completely understandably taking ahead of Anna.
Yeah, she's going to be interesting to watch play, though, and it's to her benefit, I think, that she starts on this tribe, where you have these potentially more passive or more malleable players that could be used to her own devices. The interesting thing for me is going to be if she ever meets up with Liz and ends up working either with her or against her. Like, that could be a very fun conflict to focus some part of the season around.
Yeah, it is. I was actually surprised that they ended up casting both of them. They seem like the exact same type to me.
I don't think so.
Remarkably similar.
I don't know. I think Anna fits more on the beauty tribe, not in terms of looks necessarily, but just that that kind of personality and mentality where you could imagine her being cast as like the bikini babe if you knew nothing about her. Whereas Liz, I think, comes across as more like you would not be surprised that Liz is a banker, let's say, whereas you might be surprised that Anna is a poker player just based on the way that she carries herself.
What is Anna going to lie about what she does? And if so, what is she going to say that she does?
I have to think so. I didn't see the answers to that based in any of the interviews, but like when the idea of lying about your profession has been taken to such an extreme in recent seasons, it's hard for me to imagine that Anna just won't do that. But yeah, I just play poker for a living. Have at it.
One final thing, at least for me on Anna, is how much does the, I know they didn't get to see this happen, but how much does the Vanessa Rousseau factor play into things for you? Like having seen her on Big Brother this summer?
So she is maybe the best counterexample to a lot of the stuff that I've been saying. It's worth noting, though, that for a good portion of the first half of the season, it did not look like Vanessa was going to be any kind of like countervailing evidence at all. Like she was, the first few weeks out there, she was just melting down. She was having a really bad time of it. And then she made this like marvelous recovery and ended up just dominating most of the game in her own kind of very idiosyncratic way. So I don't know. I think it's hard to really compare Vanessa to anybody, really. Like, she's someone who, had we spoken more about Big Brother 17, we would have had a lot to say about at various points, and it would not have been consistent. Like, what we said at the start and preseason would have differed both, you know, with each other and also with what we said later on. So I still haven't fully crystallized my thoughts about her, and I don't really know how she might compare to Anna. I think Anna's more like the normal, she's kind of within the normal reservation of how you think about Survivor players, if that makes sense. Whereas yeah, Vanessa's, and I think, Vanessa's just kind of in her own category by herself.
Right. I think Vanessa, the thing that really stands out about her is, at least by the late, you know, early, middle, and certainly by the end game, she was just constantly everywhere, scheming with every single person at all hours, based on what I could at least tell, just watching, you know, reading people's tweets about what was happening on the live feeds. I don't see that necessarily being the case with Anna. I think Anna could be someone who is willing to just let a good situation be what it is and doesn't need to have every single possible angle covered, because I feel like I know there's a school of thought like Dan Giesling always wants, regardless of what happens, I need to be backed up here and here and here. I feel like that, you know, for mere mortals, unlike Dan, an attempt at doing that is going to come off as so sketchy that it's not even worth it in the long run. And I feel like Anna, unlike Vanessa, could actually benefit from being on the right side of that.
The other thing about Vanessa is Eric Stein had a fantastic podcast on RHAP about crossovers between Big Brother and Survivor and how different players from one show might do on the other. And I think Vanessa is someone who might be very well suited to Big Brother, but if she tried that on Survivor, it would just completely blow up in her face. Or maybe it would be even more effective somehow. I don't know. But I think there is a big difference there that means comparing them becomes even harder than it might be normally.
I don't think Survivor is a fluid enough game for Vanessa Rousseau to last. Like, I think it takes someone of like Tony's ability to be able to be switching things up and covering all of his bases. I don't think Vanessa Rousseau is on that level. I think she just comes across as sketchy for the most part.
And also, Tony was able to do that because he already had power. And to his credit, he was able to switch things up early on so that he did have power. But if you just go in there on day one trying to do that, then if people don't like what they see from you, then you're done. Like, you're dead to rights. So you can't do anything about it.
Yeah. All right. So I, again, like, as with, honestly, I don't think there's one person that I would qualify as a dud in this cast. I think I'm honestly looking forward to see what everyone brings to the table. And I think I understand at least part of why everyone was cast. I could totally see what popped for casting, at least.
Sure. So it's back to me, is it?
It sure is. Let's see what horrible picks you make now.
Okay.
Can you pick Darnell again? Is that an option? Can I actually, one thing I meant to say about Darnell that I didn't say, so I'll say it now, is it seems like he's pretty popular on Twitter. If he does, in fact, go on to win, I'm going to feel retroactively spoiled.
Yeah, like, I know, not to call people out, but they know who they are. Some people have been, like, tweeting out their preseason popularity polls that they've done on their websites or whatever, and I scroll past those as soon as I see them, and I'm sorely tempted to mute those people just because, as far as I know, there are no spoilers out there, but if there is like any hint of like, oh, someone gets medevaced or whatever, I don't want that remotely seeping through into my consciousness at all. So, yeah.
Right. It's a what is the upside versus what is the downside? The upside is virtually nothing. Hey, this is what these people thought would happen. Whereas the downside is when it's an overwhelming majority on one person, when there are still theoretically 18 alive, that's going to be bad news for the people who want to stay unspoiled.
Right. It's like something that I'm very, very mildly curious about, bordering on spam versus just ruining the entire season.
Right. And again, like, I don't even know if that's happening for this season, but just in general, I'm totally on board with that. Yeah. So I guess, yeah, go ahead and make your next picks.
All right. So I will lead off with Neil Gottlieb, who is somewhere in his mid-30s, not quite sure how old. He is an ice cream entrepreneur from California, also has some other titles, I believe. He is a solid Dirty 30 groupie, spends a lot of time with them, and certainly seems in keeping with that kind of vibe, or at least a kind of Max Dawson vibe, for whatever that's worth. And I don't know what to feel about Neil. I think he, more than a lot of people, is using that very long off season for him between coming back from filming and like registering in the public consciousness to like develop his own brand, if that makes sense.
Yeah. That is a good point. And like on the Dirty 30 thing, like Rob flagged up on his preview with Nicole, I think it is at least worth mentioning that if you just went out there and won Survivor, the first move is probably not go be BFFs with the Dirty 30, right? Like that at least has to raise some red flags. I mean, maybe not. Like what better group of people to rub it in their faces that you just won Survivor, right?
Sure. And it's not like there are any other like washed up reality stars in Los Angeles that you could hang out with. So, you know, sure. he does what he has to.
Okay, so why did you pick Neil? What do you like about Neil? Why is he going to win this?
So I picked Neil because his personality is strange and kind of endearing, but in a weird way, in a way that no one else in the cast really stands out to me with this many people left on the board. And he seems, you know, he's on the brain stripe. He seems pretty smart, pretty aware of who he is and how he's being perceived. And if he can harness that into something good, then great. If he can't, then whatever. But and that sounds so non-committal, and it is, but I honestly can't think of anything stronger to say about half these people. Like, and maybe that's a good thing. And if you're right about there being no duds on this cast, then maybe everyone is kind of sharing that aspect of the season between themselves, and that's great. But if not, then how are we even meant to kind of process any of them?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, there are reasons to believe in Neil, I would say, where he does come across as self-aware and intelligent and things like that. The question is, like, if he's not able to bond with people, then all he's going to be aware of is that he's going to get voted out. Like, it doesn't help you to be self-aware if no one likes you. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think Neil being on the Brains tribe, I think, is probably a good thing for Neil. And actually, interestingly, Peter is the youngest guy on the Brains tribe at 34. Neil, I think, is 38. And then we have Joe, who's in his 70s. So he's, you know, 38 is not particularly old for this tribe by any stretch. And the larger point is, I think he could have an easy time finding a good group on this starting tribe.
Yeah, if Neil was on last season, he would be like the third youngest man in the entire cast.
Yeah, that's not far off. I think Neil is sort of fishbacky, but I think Steven has, like, honestly, I think it's just confidence, or maybe it's just polish, where Steven, when he talks, comes across as like, I think he like energizes himself for the cameras or for podcasting. He's a great podcast guest. Whereas I think Neil kind of, even on in front of the camera, talks the way he normally would in just a conversation that he's not even necessarily that interested in. But I think there's at least a possibility that once Neil gets more comfortable out there, I could actually see him really turning it on. And I think if we are looking for upside, out of the people left on the board, I think Neil has got to be one of the higher upside people.
Yeah, Neil could just be Vince. And if you listen to Max Dawson, that's fantastic news. But in terms of me winning the draft, maybe not so good. But Neil is certainly intriguing. And it's going to be fun to see how he does in those early episodes.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing Neil. Who you got with your second pick?
So who's even left on the board at this stage?
So remaining on the board, we have, in a non-alphabetical order, these are in the order that, who do we have? I'm not going to give them to you in the order that I want them. So,
damn it.
So the people left on the board in alphabetical order, we have Alicia, Caleb, Sydney, Debbie, Jennifer, Joe, Peter. Oh, I forgot Julia. Julia, Peter, and Scott.
I am going to try and snipe you again, I think, and take Alicia.
That is a very solid snipe. She was someone that I was actually very interested in. If you would take, she, I would have taken her with my next set of picks in all likelihood. Yeah.
Okay. You don't sound frustrated enough for my liking, but I'll count that as a victory.
Well, so, we're over halfway done at this point.
Sure. So I took Alicia because she says so many of the things that you hear all the time, like, oh, people are going to underestimate me. I'm a tomboy. All of the stuff that if you had to predict what would be on her, like, CBS website bio, then that would be on it. At the same time, she does seem quite like peppy and engaging, and I quite liked her based on the short like video clip that I saw. And so again, on a tribe where you have Kyle and Scott Pollard and Darnell and Sydney and a few other people, like, I could see Alicia just being the kind of quieter person that people just want to have on their side and to get along with, and that's great. And so I could see her making a deep run. Whether or not she can win at the end or convert that into a win, I don't know, but I think she it set up pretty well to make the merge, at least. And, you know, watch her be the first boot now. But that's what I see for her.
Yeah, I mean, she's really feisty, and I really liked that about her. And that's why I probably would have taken her next, where I think, particularly on the Braun tribe, that could be a really good thing, where she, I think that kind of bolder attitude than one might expect from someone who looks like her is probably going to be a good thing in the eyes of people on her tribe, like Kyle or like Scott, the probably guys trying to take control of things that are looking for someone dependable.
On the other hand, she does say, I don't get along well with bossy people who always think they're right, which could be a problem here. Also that she's feisty, she might struggle to hold back her temper, she wants to make big moves and not have any regrets. And if that lends itself to more aggressive gameplay, then the others on her tribe might not take too kindly to that. But if she can rein that in, then yeah, things could look up for her.
Yeah, I also really liked, she seems to be embracing the second chance mentality or philosophy, where she says she doesn't want to have any regrets. She says, I'm a doer. I make big moves. I think that's, first of all, obviously great for the game and great for the TV show. But I also think it's just a good impulse where in a game like this, where I think big moves really do are what put you in a position to win the game and win jury votes, where you can point to things like that. And I think it's good to be leaning towards, you know, often erring on the side of caution. But when it comes to a big opportunity, it doesn't seem like she's going to be afraid to take it, like going for an idol in the middle of a challenge, for instance.
Yeah, I think given the way that the game has evolved in recent seasons, where before these guys flew out, they would have seen Mike, Natalie, Tony going back, then like Tyson, Cochran, Denise, and so on. You have this long string of winners who were able to like seize chances when they saw them. And I think for Alicia, it's going to be very important to have something that she can point to say, okay, this is what I did, because I don't know if a jury is likely to respect someone of her profile otherwise. Like, she needs to have some like concrete argument that they can't really look past.
Yeah, I definitely think Alicia, probably a steal at this point, although I still think there's plenty of value left on the board here. I think this could go, I think we could easily still have the winner on the board.
All right, well, tell me who you think that could be then.
Okay, I guess, how many people do we have left? We have 9 people left, so I guess we are, no, we have 8, yeah, we have 9 people left, so we're halfway done. My next pick, I feel like I'm just going to go pure value here and not give you what would probably be a deadly combination with Neil potentially. I'm going to take Peter. Now, Dom, here in America, tell me if you've heard of this. We have a guy called Barack Obama. Do they know of him in England?
Vaguely, yes.
Yeah, this is Peter, as people may have noticed already, he looks a bit like Obama. I'm guessing he's going to get told that out on the island. He doesn't apparently like it. And by the way, I'm not sure how much I would like it either if I was 20 years younger than Obama. Like, he's 34 years old. Obama's, I think, 54, 55, somewhere in there. But I think Peter's cool. I think he's an ER doc. Certainly going to be, I think, good with that in mind, at, like, thinking on his feet. We'll see how much that can come into play interpersonally. Like, I don't know how good he's going to be at the, like, impromptu conversations. But I definitely think he's certainly smart and seems personable enough that at this point I'm happy to have him on my team.
Yeah, to me, he comes across as overconfident to the point of arrogance, and maybe that's just him hamming it up for the cameras, and in person he's going to be a lot more relatable, but I see him, like, I could see someone like Joe or Aubrey just really not taking kindly to this persona that he puts across. And
that's really interesting. I definitely didn't pick up that vibe. I thought he would be probably one of the people more inclined to just kind of hang out and be helpful around camp early on and just want to not rub anyone the wrong way.
I think he could have that laid back attitude that often comes across as not kind of laziness, but like feeling like you're too good for the task at hand. Like, mm-hmm. I would say, if I had to make a comparison, I would say like Marcus Lehmann, who is also a doctor, also very confident, well-educated, knew his stuff, but who also radiated that vibe of like, I know everything I need to know. I don't have anything to learn from you, and I don't really need you for anything. Which in Survivor, where everybody only has one vote and influence can change at any given time, is not a good thing to have associated with you, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing in an emergency room as a doctor, you do not have a lot of free time, and there is not a lot of time for things that aren't efficient and things that aren't practical.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you have plenty to get. You have so much that's on your plate that any kind of excess is not acceptable at all. And if he goes in with that approach, then absolutely, I think he could be completely screwed. But again, for me, I just didn't get that. Like, I know maybe he could be just like high strung, maybe the way that you're describing it, or maybe that's an inaccurate way of describing what you're saying, but I don't know if I necessarily get that vibe from him.
I can see him operating very naturally in that position of authority, but you know, on Survivor, where the others need to agree that you have that authority for you to actually have it, then you need to establish that first. And I don't know that he would take the time to do that. So if he does, then great. But I'm not saying it.
He's the goddamn president of the United States. He's got enough on his plate as it is, Dom. All right. So was that my second pick or was that my first? No. That was my first pick, because I'm very excited now with my second pick to take someone. When I mentioned early on that my first pick would probably almost always be the LJ equivalent, whoever the probable guy who can kind of shepherd in the beauty equivalent tribe is. The other person that I think is almost always in a great spot, and I'm actually surprised that she fell this far, is I think the relatable, strong girl, the Sarah Lucina type on the Braun tribe. And in this case, give me Jennifer.
Okay, so elaborate on that, because I expected her to be, I won't say near the bottom of the draft, but I didn't expect her to be a high pick. So are you confident in her, or is this just the best value left on the board, do you think?
Jennifer was actually someone I had a really hard time placing. I would first of all say that, yes, she does stand out at this point as the best value on the board. By, I think this is where like my tier of maybe not such strong winner candidates would start. And Jennifer would be like not even necessarily at the bottom of my tier above that. Like, I think she just fell. But I really think the person, the girl who's going to come across as dependable to the presumably kind of like alpha Braun guys, as a relatable ally that's going to hold her, you know, pull her weight in challenges and be reliable with the strategy and can contribute to the team and to the shelter and everything like that. Jennifer, she's closer in age, I think, to people. How old is Kyle, by the way? But certainly Scott Pollard is in his probably close to early 40s by now. She's 37. I feel like Jennifer is really well positioned here. And maybe my big concern is that maybe she's a little too brash for some people. She works construction. Maybe she's not as ladylike as some people would want her to be. But certainly her attitude of always wanting to be flexible is exactly what I want to see. And I think, honestly, there's a ton of upside still for someone going this late in Jennifer.
The most mysterious thing about Jennifer was she says in her bio that she was referred by someone on season 22. And there was a lot of speculation as to who that might be. Like, I know Grant Mattis's name was thrown out there. A few different names were thrown around. Turns out the most likely candidate is actually Jonas from season 24, which is not season 22. So you question how well they actually know each other. But then also she later says the person that she's most like is Kim Spradlin because, quote, I earn respect like Kim by telling you how it is. That is the polar opposite of what Kim does. Kim tells you exactly what you want to hear. And the fact that Jennifer thinks that that's what Kim does is further proof, as if it was even needed, of how just magnificent Kim is at everything.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't know why, like, if anyone ever says, if gives the answer, person you're most like out of all the former Survivor players, if anyone dares have the audacity to put Kim Spradlin, they should be automatically booted from the cast. But that being said, I do like Jennifer. Listen, Kim Spradlin, certainly a lofty goal to be shooting for, to say the least. I just feel like it's so beyond unrealistic that anyone who would be good at Survivor would recognize that Kim is probably not who they should be trying to play like, because it's impossible.
Aim high, right? Like, but yeah, believe in yourself and you can, you know. I think it's better than saying, you know, Anna says, I most like Parvati. Even Liz says, I most like Parvati, which was kind of disappointing. Peter says, I most like Pete Yakowski, which I'm fairly sure is because they're both called Pete, because I don't see any other similarities there. Alicia says she's most like Cass, which is an interesting answer. Scott Pollard says, and this is the best one, quote, I most like the professional athletes because that was my profession. So it's a profound insight there from Scott.
Nailed it.
But yeah, that question continues to deliver some truly appalling and terrifying answers.
Okay, well, Jennifer certainly could be someone that flames out early. Like, it wouldn't surprise me tremendously if she just didn't get along with her tribe and didn't care that she didn't fit in. But I still feel like Jennifer is someone I definitely could see having certainly plenty of upside and potentially a winner still. Yeah. So it is back on you now.
All right. So let's take Joe off the board.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't hate it. I was wondering when Joe was going to go.
So, and as terrible as it sounds, one of the reasons I have him so low is because I think there's a high chance he is one of the casualties of the toughest season ever. Like, as by far the oldest guy in the cast, and I think the second oldest guy to ever play the game at the time he went out there, he seems to be in decent physical shape, but even given that, it can't be easy for him.
I mean, he would be in decent physical shape if he was in his 30s. This guy is ripped for being in his 70s. And yeah, I think Rudy was the only person ever in his 70s to play Survivor before. So I think he is, in fact, I think he passes Jimmy Johnson as the second oldest ever. Joe, I actually really, really liked. I was thinking before I watched his video, I just knew there was a guy in his 70s. And I honestly chalked him up as just completely dead meat. I think, Joe, while you are probably right to just have some concerns about a septuagenarian, SAT word for you, out there in the harshest conditions Survivor has ever seen, I would definitely co-sign. Maybe that's not going to end so well. At the same time, I feel like if any 71-year-old I have literally ever seen could hack it, it would be this guy.
For sure. Yeah, he is quite the specimen. And I would be very high on him if it weren't for that fact. Like, he doesn't seem like the ornery old guy who's going to piss everybody off and just start ordering them around the way that BB did. Like, he's going to be, I think, more laid back, more willing to listen and to kind of impart his wisdom, if you like, but without being too intrusive.
Well, let me tell you about another former FBI agent. How about Jack Owens from BB4? Is that a fair possible upside comparison?
Friend of the podcast and confirmed mensch, Jack Owens. Yeah, Jack was in his mid-50s, right, when he was in the house?
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess, like, after a certain point, the age difference is so big anyway that it doesn't matter too much. But yeah, I think Joe, I don't think he's going to be, like, ostracized because of his age, if that's the concern.
Right. I think the concern is maybe not actively ostracized. Like, I think you are right. He definitely seems like the type who can totally come across as super personable, and he'll probably go in there with the mentality of, I'm going to probably have a hard time getting in a solid alliance, so I'm just going to go with whatever people seem into. And I think people will get that read from him and view him early on as, like, hey, we can bring Joe in. He'll just go with whatever. I think he has a shot here to overcome the age gap.
Yeah, the concern would be if people think, well, we like Joe, but the conditions out here are terrible. We need to win challenges, and this guy's in his 70s, so, you know, that's our first boot.
I mean, if this tribe wins the first couple rounds of immunity, but other people from other tribes start dropping early, like from medevacs, they could start, is this guy going to be able to hold out for 39 days?
For sure.
But I do. Look at him. Like, I'm not trying to say this not in a homosexual way, John. But look at that guy. Like, I would kill to look like that. And I'm 28 years old.
How young do you think he could pass as being? Like, if he said he was 55, do you think they would go for it?
I would have probably guessed 55 to 59 range. I never would have guessed he was in his 70s. Maybe not never. I would have guessed he was in his 70s before his 40s. But I definitely think he could pass for, like, this may be actually a spot where he could get away with saying, hi, I'm Joe, I'm 56 years old.
Yeah, and I guess, like, he would need to keep his story straight with, like, oh, I joined, I guess he wouldn't say I was an FBI agent, but he might say, like, oh, I joined the Naval Academy when I was 23 or something. And, like, if he gets his dates wrong, that could be awkward, but
talking about, like, what FDR was telling him to do in the FBI.
Yeah, but they sent me out to, yeah, like, when Pearl Harbor was happening and I got the call to enlist, yeah. But yeah, so as long as he can not get into a tangle with that, then I think that would actually be a pretty good idea. Like, I think the anchoring effect when you say you're 70 is so strong, maybe, that if you can say, oh, I'm 59 or something instead, that sounds a lot more realistic, if you like.
Yeah, no, I think it's the same reason that people put the prices of, hey, this isn't $20, it's $19.99. If he could say I'm 59 or I'm 69 instead of I'm 69, dude. If I'm 69 instead of I'm 71, I think that honestly could, it sounds so much lower. That's why the stores do it. Yeah. All right. So it is, I believe, your pick yet again, because you have six people and I only have five. Okay. No, just kidding. It's my pick.
Well, thanks for getting my hopes up there, Colin.
Yeah. God. Because you started with one, then I went to two, then you went to three. Okay. So I'm going to go to six and seven now. I have the next two picks. Let me just confirm this.
Wait,
is that correct?
No. I started with Nick, then I took Aubrey and Darnell, and then Neil and Alicia,
okay,
and now I have Joe
right.
And one more. So
you're right.
You just want to steal my pick from me. Not that there's anybody I really want at this stage. I think we're reaching the bottom of the barrel here.
So you'll forfeit and give me everyone else?
No. I think for entertainment's sake, I actually... For her age, and it sounds patronizing, but I don't think you can say it without sounding patronizing. I think Julia is intriguing, but yeah, I'll just say Julia. Why not?
I'll tell you why. It's because she's obviously the top of my draft board right now.
Wonderful. So she is only 18 years old, which is, I believe she's the youngest ever. Like, Natalie Tenorelli was 19. I think Spencer Dunn was 18 or 19, but towards
Frosty
the higher
like
end.
Frosty was 20 or so. Yeah.
Frosty was 20. The young lad himself, Spencer Bledsoe, was like 22, I think. So 21. So yeah, I think Julia might actually be the youngest person ever. And despite that, she says she has a lot of life experience that's going to help her out there, which to the extent that it's true for her, it's going to be true of anybody unless she's had the most amazing life that any 18-year-old has ever had, which maybe is true, but it sounds like it was just a standard, like, I went camping in Tanzania on my gap year style thing.
That's literally what it was. It's as if you've read her bio, Dom. She went camping in Tanzania on her gap year. But she has been apparently a super fan of the show, even though she was like three, I guess, when it started. But she is into like outdoorsy stuff. And she definitely kind of like what we were saying about Alicia. I really liked both of them where they seem similar to me of like, people will probably really underestimate them. Where I think while they may not have like a ton of actual life experience, like they're not married and have kids, they haven't had crazy jobs or whatever. I think there is a lot more, they have a lot more experience in ways that are going to matter for Survivor than people realize. Like they are both, I think, into the outdoors and stuff like that. I think they are both really personable. They come across great on camera. I think they're going to be really good and confessional. Like, I don't think, I feel bad lumping her in with Alicia just because they're like the young blondes or whatever. But I don't think it's going to be another scenario where we have these younger girls that just don't even show up on the show. I would at least be very disappointed if that is the case. Julia was someone when I was like initially setting up my draft board, she was quite high. And I honestly moved her down because I thought you would yell at me if I took her too high. Yeah. All right. So it is back on me now. And this is pretty tough. I honestly feel like when we have in alphabetical order left on the board here, we have Beast Mode Cowboy Caleb, we have Sydney, we have Debbie, we have Scott Pollard, and we have Ty. I think out of the people of those five, the one with, I think, the highest upshot, okay, I think the one with the highest upside as far as a social game goes is actually Scott Pollard. So give me Scott Pollard. I think very much to my surprise, he came across as like really measured in his, at least in his pregame interview. And maybe that'll change when he's eating 400 calories a day tops.
He did seem like the gentle giant type, that's for sure.
Yeah, much more so than I would say about Cliff or certainly about John Rocker, where I feel like Scott, you know, he said he made an attempt to like educate himself about the game. He's going to try to approach it, I think, in a smart way. I think out of the famous athletes, Jeff Kent probably stands alone. I didn't think Gary was too bad. It's certainly not a bad player overall by any stretch. Like certainly plenty of people respected Gary Hogaboom. And Scott, I think the big issue is just how he physically stands out. But I could actually see him having a really good temperament for this game, which as someone who loosely follows the NBA and certainly knew him from the NBA is a tremendous surprise.
Yeah, I think you might see a reversion to type 2 days in when the enormity of what's going to happen like suddenly hits him and he has to deal with the people and the conditions and the starvation and everything else. Like if this is any kind of facade, it's going to be blown away very quickly, I think.
Yeah, I mean, do you think it is, though? Because it seemed to me like he has no real reason to lie to the cameras. And he was subdued is the wrong word, but that is how I would describe him compared to what I would expect out of Scott Pollard. And I know, Dom, you don't keep a close eye on the NBA, very casual NBA fan over in England. But Scott Pollard was famous for, like, probably the thing he was most famous for is he was, like, on the bench at one point and, like, a camera guy zoomed right up onto his face and he just mouthed the words, "Hey, kids, do drugs," on live TV. Like, he does not strike me as the type that would be great at Survivor. So to see him out here, and granted, I said the same thing about Jeff Kent back in the day, that Jeff Kent had a reputation for being like a hothead.
And Jeff Kent was kind of a hothead, right? I mean, not in a very like overt way, but you could tell he couldn't really fade into the background. He had to take the reins and seize control and really leave his mark on the game. And it's possible that Scott could be the same way.
It definitely is possible. And certainly, again, going back to his size, like, Scott may go in there with the mentality of, he's certainly going in there saying, "I'm not going to lie about who I am or what I did." I'm guessing it wouldn't surprise me if no one knew who he was just by recognizing him. But it also wouldn't surprise me if there's any basketball fans in there, fans of the NBA. There are not that many 6'11 white guys that played that long in the NBA that they would cast them on Survivor. So I could see Scott getting recognized almost by like process of elimination, kind of like John Rocker. But I could see him with that in mind.
Excuse me, John Wetland, I think you mean.
That's right. I could see him saying, if there's going to be a target on me because of my size and celebrity status, regardless, I'm going to go in there guns blazing. Yeah. So that could either be an issue or a good thing, I suppose, for Scott. But certainly remains to be seen. Point being, overall, though, on Scott, much more optimistic than I was expecting to be. And by the way, I will add, for the NBA fans out there, if this trend continues of casting these like washed up NBA big men, I am really looking forward to Birdman on season 38. I know, Dom, that's going to mean nothing to you, but I want to call that shot now. I want Birdman out on Survivor at some point. Okay, with my next pick and my final pick, because you're going to get the last two and then I'm going to get the default person, just for fun, just for the possible Yao Man upside, give me Ty Trang. I want him on my team.
I love Ty. Maybe he's going to turn out to be just a caricature or whatever, but he just seems so upbeat and so positive, which is, of course, just a reflection of who I am as well, that I see so much of myself in him as an aging Vietnamese gardener that I just have to root for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember which of the Survivor historians, unfortunately, it was that said this on one of their Fiji podcasts, but one of them said, and I could not agree more, and it may be more true of Yao than maybe like most, certainly most, if not everyone who's ever played Survivor. If everyone in the world was just a little bit more like Yao Man, how amazing would the world be? Yeah. And I feel like Ty could definitely have that same kind of vibe. My concern is obviously he is not that much like the other people on this season, particularly on his beauty tribe. So that could definitely be a concern where it's the three young super fan girls, Caleb and Nick, who are probably more the type they might be interested in than maybe Ty. Although, who knows? Maybe they'll love Ty as the older gay best friend.
Yeah, I think I won't say the nightmare scenario for the season, but one way I could easily see it developing is Nick just like scooping up the women and, or I guess them deciding to work with him, and the four of them as a voting block, if you want to call it that, just like taking out Ty and then hopefully taking out Caleb, because I really don't want to have to see him again, but maybe that's not in the cards. I don't know.
Okay. Do you think Ty has winner upside, or like we've seen certainly in Yao Man, who is the very obvious comparison, someone with a strong accent and not great social skills, not to suggest that Ty doesn't have great social skills, but I could see him maybe having a hard time fitting in potentially. They can still succeed in this game if they can find their footing and find the right couple of people, I think.
I was going to say he could be like the Keith Nail type, where
okay,
if he makes it deep, he is going to be the unlikely outsider who does have a shot at winning if he gets to the end, but it's unlikely that he actually will.
Yeah. Well, kind of like, I think if Ty could find his Earl Cole, as someone he really connects with and can really talk about the game with and feel good about, and Earl can do a lot of the social work for Ty, whoever the Earl is, then I could see things going very well for Ty when it comes to being a jury threat. The question is, can he find that person?
Could we just bring back Earl at some point?
I would love to. I don't know how many people are really on board with that, even for an all-winners season. Although, we don't say this enough. I'm guessing you're still on board with this. Earl, for me, is a clear top five winner.
Yeah, there have been a lot of good winners recently, but Earl, I think, does get forgotten about, and not in like the hipster sense where everyone forgets about Earl, but the people in the know like all actually remember him. I think Earl just does get forgotten about because, you know, Fiji was a long time ago. It's not rated highly as a season by many people, and Earl, I like his personality, but it's not a very dynamic one, if that makes sense. So mm-hmm. It's easy for Earl to kind of get swept away by time. But I think if you actually look back at what he did in that season, it was very impressive indeed.
I mean, I honestly feel like Earl is like borderline Spradlin-esque, where just it seems like every answer he gave was the perfect answer that people wanted to hear. Yeah. But back to Ty. Any other parting thoughts on Ty? I definitely, as I feel like I keep saying about everyone, really looking forward to seeing what Ty brings to the table, and very, very happy to have him on my team.
Yeah, I hope he's there for a long time. And I don't know how realistic that is. Like, maybe he needs to get saved by a swap at some point, but long may it continue for however long it lasts.
Yeah. All right. So we have Caleb, Sydney, and Debbie on the board. You have two picks remaining. I'm going to get the default pick. Who are you taking next?
All right. So I can officially anoint a winner by making them the penultimate pick of the draft. And so I am going to bestow that honor upon Debbie, I think, just because I think that would be hilarious. So I'll take Sydney and Debbie, and I will leave you with the Beast Mode Cowboy himself, even though I have a terrible suspicion that he actually does decently well this season.
Yeah, as do I. But let's start off. So we'll go officially for the official count. For people who missed our podcast a couple seasons ago when we were drafting 18-player seasons, or I guess one of them was a 20-player season and she went 19th, Natalie Anderson went penultimate pick, second to last pick. And then the very next season, Tony Vlachos went 17th out of 18. So Dom is bestowing that honor upon Debbie as the eventual winner of this season. But let's get into Sydney first.
Sure. So I don't know if I have to spend multiple picks on all of Sydney's personalities here if I want her to take her in the draft, but I liked what I saw of Sydney. I can't speak to the other people that apparently reside in her head, according to her, but she seems like someone who would be a hoot in real life, but out there on Survivor, you just don't really want to have to put up with.
Well, this is my question, because she's a pre-med student. She's a psych major. She wants to be the trainer for the Atlanta Falcons. Very noble, huge NFL fan. That'd be awesome if she got to do that. I feel like she has, when she's being Sydney, like a solid mix of like Southern charm, and she comes across as pretty smart. The question I have is, of course, about the multiple personalities thing. But if you listen closely to her video, she talks first about Rebecca, and then when she starts talking about Storm, she says, and then there's Storm. I developed Storm the other day. I feel like this is her creating. It's not like they're coming about organically. She's saying, when I'm acting this way, I'm going to call it something else so I can like compartmentalize it. I don't think it's legitimately like multiple personality disorder.
I would love it if she was able to maintain all of these conflicting personalities just as like some fiction for the cameras, so that she could get herself more screen time while also playing the game in the process. Like, that would be incredible if that's what she was able to do.
Kind of like Joey at the beginning of BB16, where she had the male alter ego or whatever.
Yeah, and that worked out great for her because she's now,
remember Joey? I was wondering if you'd even remember her.
Or Alex, if you prefer. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think if Sydney actually starts talking to people about that, then they're going to kind of run away very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sydney, one might expect from someone with self-proclaimed multiple personalities, could go a lot of different ways here. But I wouldn't say that Sydney is actually drawing dead even by any stretch.
No,
like,
no.
I think Sydney could definitely get in there. And if this video is just like not a very good representation of how she really is and is more a representation of how she played herself up for casting, and she really is going to go in there with a whole different mindset, I could absolutely see this working out really well. Like, I do think there are germs there of some really fundamentally good things that someone would want having going for them in Survivor, as far as being like interpersonal skills and just general intelligence. I could actually see Sydney doing quite well in both of those capacities. And then your 17th out of 18th pick, Dom, is Debbie. And I was actually, one thing I wanted to bring up is, it seemed to me like that we've stretched. Of course, Scott is the new Cliff Robinson, and maybe Jennifer is the new Sarah, as I said, or whatever. It seems like there aren't that many, or at least not as many as I would have expected, kind of direct comparisons to the original Brains Beauty Brum. Like, I am floored that they didn't put in Spencer 2.0, like some young cocky kid on the Brains tribe. But Debbie, well, my point is, I could see them deliberately saying, here's our new cast.
Yeah, so I think maybe Nick was kind of meant to be cast in that role, although he ended up on the Beauty tribe, so I don't know what's really going on there. It does surprise me, though. I think if there's one comparison you can make with Debbie, could she be the female coach that we've been waiting for?
God, I hope so. I feel like we're long overdue for the female coach.
We really are. And Debbie's fashion is iconic. Like, that tiger swimsuit, like, that puts the bear shirt to absolute shame. Like, Judd should, you know, pack up his things and go home if he hasn't already, because that is That just ends it all. There's no further discussion there.
Yeah, I mean, I have in my notes Bathing Suit Hall of Fame. I don't even know if it's Hall of Fame. This might be Bathing Suit, like, Billboard all-time number one bestseller by a mile. This is Michael Jackson Thriller of Bathing Suits.
Hall of Fame implies that there could be other members. I think this is just in a tier by itself.
Although, lest we forget Tyson's little man bikini in Heroes versus Villains that I think had some kind of animal printed on it.
This has more, I guess, like raw surface area, though. So just like more visually imposing.
That's true. That is definitely true. So is Debbie someone that you think can actually pull through with a win here? I know Caleb is the only one left on the board, and we talked about Sydney as having outs. Is Debbie someone who has outs?
I don't think so, but I really hope so.
I mean, Debbie being the chemist, the bomb diffuser or whatever, I would imagine is not like some great social butterfly or whatever, but I don't think that's why she's cast. Like, I think she's cast to be an interesting character, like much different from all of the other people. I think she's going to be a really interesting fit on this Brains tribe in particular. Like, as we talk about quite often, it seems, when we have these themed seasons, who benefits from that theme? I think she could be someone like Shireen last time in the White Collars, where she's going to be far better suited being with people who are like her.
And that worked out so well for Shireen that, you know, why wouldn't Debbie want to follow
in
her footsteps?
It's a good thing. It's better than a random tribe. I think the Brains are a much better draw than a random tribe for Debbie.
Sure.
The question is, are they going to have concerns about, hey, we don't want to bring on the next Chaos cast or the next female coach? We don't want any part of that. We want to have a cohesive, fun alliance. So that could at least be a concern. And obviously, maybe it's mean or whatever to say, I think she could have some concerns about getting jury votes come final tribal council time, but who knows? And so, Dom, with the last pick, the default pick, someone that we actually know already from watching the magic that was Big Brother 16, one of the greatest reality seasons of all time, for my money. The best part, probably the week where they literally fucking canceled everything. From that is Caleb Reynolds, a.k.a. Beast Mode Cowboy. He's 28. He's on the beauty team. Dom, we, as I mentioned, know him from Big Brother. How do we think he's going to transition now over to Survivor? Do you think his air quotes skills are going to carry over well?
So I think Caleb is actually going to be a fascinating test of, you take someone who I don't think has any actual talent for games like this, and just given the experience of having played a game similar to this for one time and having that edge over the competition, what does that actually count for? And I think in Caleb's case, it could count for quite a bit. Not enough to help him win, not enough to get him in the mix for being a winner candidate, but I think it could set him up for another deep run here, and it wouldn't shock me at all if he was still there, like going into Final 7, Final 6, Final 5.
Yeah, kind of. For people who didn't see him on Big Brother, he did make a very deep run on Big Brother as part of this big bro alliance, but Caleb the whole time, like, what happened is there was this big, like, half the house was in an alliance on week one called the Bomb Squad, and then this dude Derek, who was just crushing everyone, started all these little sub alliances. He had the Hitmen and whatever else they were called, which is like his two alliance. Then he had his four alliance, and Caleb was just part of this like big five plus alliance. And it was actually funny watching the whole season, where the Bomb Squad, as it was known, blew up in everyone else in the house's eyes as of like week two. No one else thought that was a thing. But even through like week 11, 12 or so, Caleb is still in the diary room talking about how it's Bomb Squad forever. And I think that actually image could be great for him here. If people have seen him on Big Brother, all due respect to Caleb and all other facets of life, but when it comes to these games, it seems, at least based on that performance, that he's going to be the reliable, loyal idiot.
Yeah, Caleb might be the perfect ally in that he is dumb enough to be loyal to you and not really get his own ideas. I think not well-liked enough to win a jury vote, although I can almost dread the idea of like people somehow finding him endearing, and then he actually becomes a jury threat somehow, which I really hope that doesn't happen. But on top of all of that, he can also win challenges to keep immunity out of someone's hands if you need to vote them out soon. And he will just stick with you until the bitter end and believe what you tell him. So I could see one of the smarter players on the season really just thinking, okay, this is the guy I want on my side, and taking him under their wing.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think Caleb's skills, if we want to call them that, translate a lot better on Survivor than they do on Big Brother. Like, Big Brother, honestly, is a harder game in the first place. Whereas Caleb, if he wants to be, I think Brandon Hance is not an entirely unfair comparison here, where he's going to get something in his mind and he's just going to probably stick with that until the very end. And in Survivor, that's a much more viable game plan where you can just stick with that until the end. And I think you're right that when he does come across as, no, this is who I'm loyal to and this is the plan, and he's not teasing other people, he's not saying, hey, maybe I'll flip over with you, that could get him jury votes at the end of the day. He wasn't the one like Albert, or for as a historically famous example, toying with the people about maybe I'll flip, the same way that Brandon was a legitimate jury threat, which still fucking blows my mind.
It's still insane like 5 years later. But to build on that Brandon comparison, do you think there's a chance that Caleb will just like creepily stalk another one of the female contestants until the bitter end again?
I think I heard that he is spoken for, so I'm not positive. Well, I'm certainly not going to rule it out. I will not rule it out.
Yeah. But it would be weird if, like, let's say someone like Anna or Liz thinks, okay, I need Caleb on my side here, but they don't really like they just don't like him as a person, or they don't like the way that he's treating them. Like, that could be a weird dynamic to have to navigate, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely could see him kind of like, again, to go back to Brandon, where Brandon didn't like Michaela because Brandon at the time had three little kids and was married, and Michaela was viewed as like temptation. And I could see Caleb, if he's got a girl back home, viewing Anna and whoever else is on that tribe as like the tempted, the whores of Babylon, the new whores of Babylon, as Sophie put it, about Michaela, where they make him so uncomfortable that he wants them out. Like, I could definitely see that same thing happening. He definitely does seem to have some kind of issues. Maybe that's the wrong word for it. He does seem to have some kind of hang-ups when it comes to gorgeous women. So I guess who doesn't? So Dom, that is it, actually. That is all 18 people for the cast. Before we get into our official winner picks, because there is certainly plenty of game strategy that goes on in a draft, as you guys probably noticed, a lot of it went into who we think the other person is going to pick. My first pick is not necessarily my winner pick. But before we get into that, let's talk about these hidden immunity idols that apparently combine into transferable Tyler Perry idols. You buy in this? You like this?
I don't like what this might mean for idols going forward, where they become an even bigger part of the game and even more powerful potentially, and all of this extra time has to go into obtaining them and figuring out what to do with them and then conveying the rules to the audience. But I think it's an interesting twist. I don't know if I actually want to see it implemented on a Survivor season, though, and there's going to be a lot of confusion, I think, about how the rules are going to work. Like, let's say I have a piece and you have a piece. Like, who gets to... I imagine we both have to agree to use it, but then what happens if we disagree? Like, I imagine there's lots of arcane stuff like that that they can't really afford to show to the audience, but which will actually heavily determine how they might get played. And so that's going to be kind of annoying not being privy to that.
Right. Like, if you and I both have... individually our own halves of the Tyler Perry idol that we could for now keep just as regular hidden immunity idols, and our final three person gets voted out, how much time do we have to talk about, hey, do we want to combine these and transfer them before that person gets up and takes their torch over to Jeff?
Right, like it's hard for us to speculate about what this twist might mean, because we just don't know how it's going to work, for one thing. So for as much as we're going to enjoy thinking about all of the possibilities when we know, like, oh, person A has it and person B has it, I don't know if that's going to amount to anything. And also, we don't know what it could amount to.
Right. I do. I guess what we do know is just that it's going to happen. Not necessarily that it's going to come into play, but that it's an option this season for idols to get combined. I actually would be surprised if, certainly if one person ended up pulling this off. Granted, we just saw a season where people found multiple idols. The same person found multiple idols. I would be it takes some pretty exceptional circumstances, I would guess, for one person to get the Tyler Perry idol all to themselves. I would guess that it would have to come down to two people locking together their idols. And I'm not so sure how willing this cast is necessarily going to be about being forthcoming about any idols that they may find after seeing how some of these more recent seasons have played out.
Yeah, it feels like the most likely scenario maybe is if two people in the same alliance find it and they're able to buddy up, and then let's say one of them wins immunity at a crucial point, and then they can just use their two halves on the other person or something. Or when it's about to expire, they think, well, we may as well use it on one of us. And then that maybe becomes an interesting conversation, but I don't know.
Yeah, or they could have a deal like, neither of us will ever use it until one of us is voted out, at which point we will always use it on that person. But then the other one could just betray them and vote that person out and keep the idol for themselves. But what I was going to say is it seems just hard on the surface, right, that it's not like they're going to put multiple idols in at the same camp. So it seems like it would take people coming from different starting tribes or a merge idol to make this actually come together. I don't know. Certainly plenty to be seen when it comes to that. Dom, one other thing that I wanted to get to just before we lock in our winner picks for season 32 and get out of here is a lot, obviously, as we've talked about, is being made about these conditions. We are expecting plenty of people to be getting beaten up and maybe quite several medevacs potentially. I just want to say I hate that. I hate that they're making the conditions such a big part of the show again. As I've said many times before, I wouldn't care at all if they filmed every season in Samoa. I know I am not. I know that's not the most popular opinion, but I feel like when the conditions, certainly this is an extreme case, probably more extreme than we've ever seen before, but I feel like this is actually almost a good thing at the end of the day, where I hope that this is really bad so production sees that the last thing we want to do is kill these people. We want them to be happy, not starving, not like on Fiji in the Ravu camp, not like in Guatemala where they can't even get out of the shelter. We want them out there playing the game. I really hope that conditions are awful this season so that it sets the trend to go back to completely cushy conditions.
Yeah, I also hate that the fact that they feel they need to advertise it so heavily maybe suggests that there isn't much else to hold your attention, and so they have to focus the episodes and the season around this stuff, which it's engaging to a point, I suppose, but like if there isn't much interesting interactions between people, not much interesting strategy, then if this is all there is to keep your attention focused on the show, then that's not a good sign, I don't think.
Well, I think at least for now, it's not the end of the world, where as long as it's preseason and what are they really going to go on? Like, we don't know any of these people yet, apart from maybe a couple of people know Scott Pollard or whatever, where if this is a preseason promo and I'm on CBS, what can I really build up that doesn't, first of all, spoil like how things go down, but also like can get people somewhat, at least there's a hook to why they might want to watch the season, where the conditions, hey, it's going to be crazy. This is going to be the most extreme season of Survivor ever. That at least I kind of understand. But the general impulse overall to want to make the conditions bad on these players, I think is a terribly misguided one on production's part. And I hope we never see it nearly this bad again. All right, Dom, I know this has gone on longer than we even planned on. Give me your official winner pick.
So I said before, I'm throwing it all behind Liz and Aubrey. I'm going to go with Liz. I don't know if that's the smart pick or the right pick, but that's what I'm going with.
All right. I'm going to actually trade you my number one draft pick as your winner pick. I will take your number one draft pick as my winner pick. Give me Nick. I just want to be on the Nick Express already.
All right.
All right, cool. Thank you guys very, very much for checking us out. We will, of course, be back hopefully every week this season to do our regular Survivor coverage. You can follow Dom on Twitter at DomHRV. I can be found at Colin Stone. Thanks once again for tuning in. Subscribe on iTunes, all that bullshit. We'll talk to you soon. Take care, everybody.